Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl. How are you?
All right. It's program 292 in the series. How are you?
I'm great, and this is our second to last broadcast here in the Showcase Studio.
I know. You know what else it is?
Very exciting.
In 1 hour, less than an hour, Father's Day.
It sure is. So almost happy Father's Day.
Yeah. Well, we have kind of a Father's Day program for you. We are going to be tuning in to Father Knows Best, but that'll be our second program. Our first show is Box 13, a terrific episode starring Alan Ladd as a mystery writer Dan Halliday. Then, as I said, Box 13, then Father Knows Best, then Tales of the Texas Rangers. Those are our three classic radio shows for this evening. It's all brought to you by Cat's Pride, and it's time to play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote.
What's the movie? The movie is V for Vendetta.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I saw that movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, the number to call, it's a different number, folks.
Just for this weekend.
Yeah, different number, 312-591-7200, 591-7200, and we'll take the...
The eighth caller.
Eighth caller.
And you're going to win a Never Measure, which helps you center, level, and hang your wall decorations. I know. Well, I will let you use mine for a little while.
Right.
Maybe you can borrow
Call
it.
Us now, 312-591-7200. Play the game live on the air with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have James on the line tonight to play with us. Hi, James.
Oh, wait a second. There we go.
There we go. Hi, James.
Good evening.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Glad you made it through. This is one of our last Crack the Quotes here at the Showcase Studio. So, you know, it's kind of epic. The movie is V for Vendetta. Here we go. Quote number one. I can assure you, I mean you no harm. Quote number two. The liar often imagines that he does no harm. Quote number three. There is no harm in his asking.
I'll try number one.
I can assure you, I mean you no harm. You like that one too, Carl?
In my mind, James, you are number one, but I am a number two.
The liar often imagines that he does no harm.
I think it's number two.
All right, let's hear it.
I can assure you, I mean you no harm.
You got it right, James. You are on it. And we broke Carl's winning streak, so I'm really upset about that. But the good news is you are a winner, James. You've won the Never Measure. You can easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations. It's fast. No need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions, which is above and beyond Carl's expertise. Veteran-owned and made in the USA. You can get yours and more information at nevermeasure.com. Thank you so much for playing. You're going to love it. I have it at home, and I actually am using it right now. I bought a big mirror.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. We're so happy. We're gonna stay with you for a long time.
Hey, James, you know what happens when Lisa looks in the mirror? She can't see her reflection. But I'm bump.
Carol, can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
On these shows where they don't announce the cast at the end of the show, could you announce the cast if you find the names?
Yeah, I will try to do a better job of that, James. You're right, because sometimes they say the cast and sometimes they don't. So I'll keep note of that and see if I can do that for you. Absolutely. It's a great suggestion. Appreciate that.
All right.
All right, my friend. Thanks, James. Appreciate you. All right, it is time now for Box 13. This was a mystery adventure show. It starred movie star Alan Ladd. He played Dan Halliday, a retired newspaper man turned fiction writer. And to gain ideas for his books, Lisa, he ran an ad in the Star Times newspaper that said, "Adventure wanted, we'll go anywhere, do anything, write Box 13. As you can imagine, people read that and were like, hey, I got problems, Right?
Right. I got plenty of them.
It's like the Listen to Lisa show back then.
Right. See, it's everything old is new again.
Like if you had a problem, you'd call the Listen to Lisa show.
And I am there for
and
you.
And since you weren't on the air back then, he ran an ad in the newspaper.
I'm sort of the updated Box 13.
Right. And then Holiday responded to the ads, and then he went off on an adventure. It got dramatized for us to hear. It was really great.
His own
company, Mayfair Productions, produced this show. So he had a big hand in not only producing it, he wrote a lot of the episodes, and he starred in it. So we're going to listen to an episode now called The Great Torino from October 24th, 1948. Here's part one now of Box 13.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holiday.
Box 13, care of Star Times. I know my life is in danger. I think you can help me. I'm desperate and don't dare go to the police. Please, if you want to help, call at the Tivoli Theater box office for the ticket left there. Our handbill will tell you more.
Our handbill will tell you more. Yeah, that's the way it started. The note from the girl, Maria. The theater ticket. And then, murder.
And now, back to Box 13.
It was Thursday when I received a letter from Maria through Box 13. Some of the letters I get are from cranks. Some from people who are just curious about a reporter-turned-fiction writer who advertises adventure wanted. Will go any place, do anything. But with this one, it was just like Susie said.
Gee, Mr. Holiday, it doesn't look like one of those crank letters or somebody that's just curious, thinks you're crazy or something.
How can you tell, Susie?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's just female ignition.
There's a dictionary over there, Susie. Look up ignition.
Don't you know what it means, Mr. Holiday? Hmm. It's when a woman...
Skip it, Susie. Skip it.
Oh, okay.
I'm supposed to pick up a ticket for tonight's show at the Tivoli. Take a look at this handbill. Torino. The Great Torino. Like his look, Susie?
Well, I don't know.
That's what I thought. Okay, Susie, close up shop for the day.
You're going to follow it up, huh?
That's the general idea, yes. I want to see what Maria has on her mind and why she's afraid. This was it. I picked up the ticket at the Tivoli. A big poster told me this was a charity affair with the acts doing a two-night stand. Tickets? $10 a throw. I circled around the lobby, looked at the acts advertised, singers, dancers, a dog act, and then there it was. A big life-size cut out of the Great Torino, complete with mustache and goatee. Nice-looking guy, maybe too smooth-looking, but it was what he was doing that made me take a better look. He held a rifle to his shoulder and was aiming it across the lobby at another cutout. And this one was a girl. Pretty? Mm-hmm. Big eyes, maybe a little scared looking, and looking straight across at the Great Torino and right into the barrel of that rifle pointed at her head. Well, if this was Maria, she had a right to have something on her mind. Anybody who stands up and lets a rifle be fired at her is earning a living the hard way. I was thinking about it when the call buzzer zizzed in my ear. I drifted in with a crowd during the overture and took my seat. First row, right on the aisle, easy to get at. An usherette shoved a program in my hands. The Great Torino was scheduled next to closing. Okay, that meant I'd have to sit through the rest of the acts. I did. It was skipping. But the Great Torino was something different. He had two assistants, a girl and a good-looking young guy. It was a magic act with class, and Torino was clever with his hands. He did a trunk effect that was really great, and the girl who helped was the same girl whose cutout was in the lobby. Torino tied her with a rope, slipped a big canvas bag over her, and locked her in a trunk. He fired a shot, and bang, the girl came running down the aisle. And the trunk she was put in? Well, empty. All done in a split second, too. The great Torino took his bow, but I noticed something. When he reached out to take the girl's hand and bow with her, she managed to be busy at something else. Okay. She didn't like him. He gave her a funny look, then walked to a rack and picked up a nice nickel-plated rifle. I sat up in my seat because the girl threw a quick look at me and a tiny nod. No one would have noticed it but me. I looked back at Torino, who was speaking.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wish to call your attention to my final effect. A most dangerous one. So dangerous that few illusionists will attempt it. The history of the magician's art has recorded several deaths during the feat. My assistant will go into the audience now and select a committee of volunteers who will please come upon the stage. Maria, if you please.
So the girl was Maria. I guess my cue was to be selected as one of the committee. I raised my hand. She picked me. I went on the stage with four others from the audience. Stood there while Torino went to the footlights and spoke again.
Please, the music. No music. Please, no music. Thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I shall give the gentleman of the committee this rifle. It may be examined thoroughly. Also, three bullets, which they may mark later for identification. Gentlemen, the rifle. And here, the bullets. Please mark the lead in any way you choose, unmistakably.
We took the rifle and the bullets. And the great Torino, well, he had the audience sitting on the edges of their seats. No one knew exactly what was going to happen, and Torino wasn't going to tell them until the right time came. Then one of the other men on the committee spoke to me.
Bullets look okay to you?
As good as any bullets can look. 22s, huh?
Yeah. How do we mark them?
Initials?
Yeah, good idea. The three of us cut our initials in the lead. That all right with you, mister?
Good. How about the rest of you?
Suits me. I've got a knife here.
Yeah, let me see the rifle.
Yeah, sure, here.
Rifle look okay? No gimmicks?
Not that I can see.
All right, my initials are cut in the bullet. You want to cut yours?
Oh, yes. I cut my initials, DH, in one of the bullets. So we had three bullets with initials cut in the lead. No chance for substitution. Then Torino took the rifle and the bullets.
Thank you, gentlemen. Grazie tanti. You are satisfied?
Sure, I am.
Yes.
Good. Now, if you will all watch closely, I shall load the bullets in the rifle. So, and what is your name, sir?
Holiday.
Good. Then, Mr. Holiday, if you will please hold the loaded rifle until I am ready for it.
Oh, sure.
In this way, there can be no trickery. Ladies and gentlemen, you saw me load the marked bullets, yes? So, and you have the loaded rifle. Good. Now, ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce once more Maria. Maria? The young lady is as courageous as she is lovely. Maria, you will take your place, please. Mr. Holiday, would you care to shoot at Maria?
Oh, no. No, thank you.
Then that leaves it up to me. No. The rifle, please.
Oh, here you are.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I shall ask for complete quiet. Thank you. Maria, you are ready?
Yes. I'm ready.
The great Torino walked to the other side of the stage. He raised the rifle to his shoulder, pointed it at Maria. She was pale as death. Her arms were tense, tight. Perspiration stood out on her forehead, and on mine, and on everyone in the audience. Then, so help me, this is what happened. A bullet appeared between Maria's teeth. She let it drop to a plate she held in her hands, then, and two more bullets popped between her teeth and fell to the plate. No one in the audience moved. No applause, just that tense feeling. Torino walked over, took the plate, His hands never touched the bullets. I'll swear to it. He walked to me and the other three men with me and...
Gentlemen, you will please to identify the bullets, yes? This one. Initials T.G.
That's me. Yeah, that's mine, all right.
Thank you. And this one, K.R.
Mine.
Thank you. And the third, D.H.
That's mine. How did he do it? I don't know. All I know is that when I walked off the stage, Maria managed to get a note into my hands. When I read it later, it asked me to meet her at a little coffee shop about 3 blocks from the theater. All right, that's what I did. We sat in a booth, back out of the way, and Maria talked.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Holliday.
That's all right, Maria. I saw a great act, but what am I doing in it?
You can help me. Please help me.
How? Doing what?
You can keep Torino from killing me.
More coffee?
Didn't you hear me?
Oh, sure. Sure, but I don't get it.
You saw the act? The rifle trick?
Yeah, it was great.
Then you must see how easy it would be for Torino to kill me while doing it.
Slow up a little, Maria. Let's start from the beginning.
All right. You saw the other assistant.
You mean the good-looking kid?
That's Billy. I love him, and he loves me.
Then what's your problem?
Torino. He hates Billy, and he hates me for loving Billy.
Jealous?
Insanely.
Well, quit then.
I will, after tomorrow night's performance.
But why wait if you're afraid?
I won't be afraid if you're there.
What could I do?
Be on the committee again. If I think anything's wrong, I'll signal you.
And then?
Do anything. Drop the rifle, but don't give it back to Torino.
Now, wait a minute. How could he kill you?
He'd claim it was an accident. Three magicians or their assistants have been killed accidentally doing the trick. The mechanism of the gun goes wrong.
Giving away secrets, Maria?
I have to. There's a mechanism in the breech of the gun. It drops the real bullets down into Torino's hand when he closes the breech.
Oh, then I get an unloaded gun.
There are blanks in it. The mechanism substitutes them for the real bullets.
That's good. And he slips the real bullets to you?
Yes, when he takes my hand to introduce me.
And you slip them into your mouth?
While the audience is watching Torino and the rifle.
I see. Maria?
Yes?
Why don't you go to the police?
Torino would know. He'd know.
How?
He watches me.
Then aren't you afraid he's watching now?
No, not tonight. I slipped away. I don't think I could manage it again. Don't you see, Mr. Holliday, you're my only chance. I saw your ad in the paper, Box 13.
You mean the police would ask him questions, and he'd lay low until he got the chance to...
Yes. Will you be there tomorrow night, Mr. Holliday? Look, I have a ticket for you here. The same seat. Please. Please.
All right, Maria. I'll be there.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we'll try to keep the trick from being trumped by the great Torino.
All right, let's take a break from Box 13. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David. All right, it is 11:37 here on a Saturday night, just about 20 minutes till Father's Day. And right at Father's Day, Lisa, we will have Father Knows Best. You see how I timed all that?
Yeah, that was a real...
That was what you call...
good planning.
Falling asleep, waking up, and putting something together, and it worked out.
No, come on, give me some credit there.
You? I give you all the credit in the world, Lisa.
Okay, well, I do deserve some.
No, we're going to have a Father's Day show on Father's Day. And what do we have tomorrow? Tomorrow we have some more Father's Day shows.
We sure do. We've got Boston Blackie. Everybody loves Boston Blackie. We've got the Life of Riley and the Big Story.
No, we don't have the Big Story.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Starting this Sunday, we are going to have a 2-hour show on Sundays. We will be on the air from 11 to 1. So we're going to drop that third hour, but we'll still have 5 hours each weekend. It'll be three hours.
But with 2 T's or but with 1 T?
1 T, definitely.
Good. Okay, good.
So Saturday night will be on 11 to 2. Sunday nights will be on 11 to 1. And the but I'm talking about is B-U-T.
All right, very good. All right, so we're listening to Box 13. And just a few seconds ago, who was that lovely lady talking about Royal Caribbean there?
Oh, I think that might have been me.
Yes, I think it was the dulcet tones of Lisa Wolf, no E at the end of her name.
Yeah, we've got lots more to talk about the cruise,
yeah,
but we
sure
want you to get
us.
The dates down, February 16th to 23rd. And what else do we want to
do? Yeah, mark the date. Go to our website, WGNRadiotheater.com, and check out the banner that's there. Click it, and it takes you right to Kelly Cruises. Learn all about our cruise that we will be embarking on. The 16th through the 23rd of February, 2019, and we're going to three great ports, right?
St. Thomas, St. Martin, and the Bahamas. It's all through Royal Caribbean, and the ship is called Symphony of the Seas, a brand new ship.
The largest ship
in the world, apparently,
yeah,
and it holds about 6,000 passengers, and Carl and I will be two of them.
Yeah. We want you to come with us,
so do
check it out. All right, make sure you come sail away with us.
That's a good title for a song.
Come sail away. You're good. Yeah,
no,
that would be a good song, Lisa.
Yep.
Come sail away. All right, right now it's Box 13. Let's go back to October 24th, 1948. Alan Ladd stars in The Great Torino. Here's the conclusion to Box 13.
And now, back to Box 13 with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Well, it sounded like a great assignment. From the way the setup looked from where I sat, it gave The Great Torino a perfect chance to kill Maria. I checked on Maria's story about the accidental deaths during the trick, and Jonesy at the Star Times verified it. A smart cookie like Torino could fake an accident, and who's going to pin the black ribbon on him? Nobody. Okay, it's up to you, Holliday, to figure it out. The next night, I sat in the same seat and watched Torino go through his act. The trunk thing, still great, knocked the audience off their seats. Me too. Couldn't figure it. But the big stuff was still to come, the rifle trick. I went on the stage, kept my eyes on Maria. I marked one of the bullets again. Oddly enough, Torino didn't seem to recognize me. That was all right with me.
And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Torino went through his same spiel, word for word. I kept my eyes on Maria. But it was as though she'd never seen me before in her life. She looked...
Maria, it sounds silly,
but she looked hypnotized. Then I heard Torino saying to me...
Mr. Holliday, would you care to shoot at Maria?
No, thank you. Torino looked at me hard. My name and my face together might have tipped him. There was a funny look in his eyes. I stared at Maria. Not a sign from her.
Maria, you are ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
I relaxed a little. She hadn't given me a sign. Everything was all right, and then...
Maria! Maria!
She dropped. Maria dropped. And right between her eyes was a little round hole.
Look, Holliday. Is that straight, that story?
Sure it is, Kling. She was afraid she'd be killed.
But you say she didn't give you a high sign.
No, she didn't even look at me.
But she told you if there was anything wrong, she'd tip you.
Yes, but she didn't tip me.
Okay.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir, Lieutenant.
Get Torino over here.
Yes, sir. All right, Joe. Lieutenant Kling wants you.
Got any ideas, Holliday?
I'm dry. Bone dry, Kling.
What about this guy, Billy, she told you about?
I told you.
Okay.
I tell you, it was accident. Something she was go wrong. Please.
Quiet. Now, look.
Accident. No. She's wrong. Accident that happened. You're some... I am an artist. You tell me I do something wrong. No. It is wrong.
Holy
accident.
Mackerel. Sergeant.
A million times.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Put this guy in his dressing room and keep him there until he blows off that head of steam.
He's wrong, you know.
But watch his door.
Please, listen to me.
And the window from outside.
Yes, sir. Come on, Houdini. Come on.
It's funny, Clint.
I'm hysterical, I don't think. What's funny?
The girl Maria. I don't think she knew me tonight. She looked right at me. Didn't give me a tumble.
Yeah? So?
She told me she'd signal me if anything was wrong. I don't get it. But it looks as though she...
She what?
She deliberately let Torino fire a gun she knew was set to kill her.
That makes great sense.
I know. No sense at all. And besides that, they're...
Get away with it. You're going to let him tell you it's all an accident. Well, don't believe it. He killed her.
That's Billy.
Kling.
What?
Let me ask him a couple of things.
Now, look, Holiday, I'm in charge of this case. You're in on a rain check.
Okay, but I'm in, huh?
Yeah, for the one reason that Maria told you about it, and
he killed her. It wasn't an accident.
Oh, I better go help the sergeant.
Any objections if I mosey along with you?
None. Just keep your mouth closed, that's all.
Sure.
All right.
So I listened while Kling asked questions. But there was something knocking at the back of my head, asking to be let in. Something I'd seen, heard, remembered. I didn't know. But what bothered me was Maria not giving me a signal. When she said she'd know if Torino was up to something. Billy answered Kling's questions.
No, no! All I know is that Torino bluffed Maria. He said he'd kill her if he saw me hanging around her.
Who loads the rifle with blanks?
Maria.
Maria. Does she do it tonight?
She always does it.
Well, I don't believe it.
Maria loaded the rifle herself. She did. Before the performance. So I got an idea. I left the stage where the investigation was going on, and I walked backstage toward the dressing rooms. I wanted to talk to Torino, but there was a large blue cop sitting at the door. He looked at me and...
Well, Holiday.
Oh, hi, Murph.
I feel lousy.
No, that's too bad. Say, think I could talk to Torino?
No.
Oh, now, look, you can watch and listen, tell Kling everything that goes on.
Playing detective, Holiday?
Nope, playing a hunch.
What about?
Why not listen and find out, and if you learn anything, tell Kling. And you might learn something good.
You mean something that might break the case?
Yeah, might.
Oh, well,
What's the matter, Murph? Can't you use a couple of stripes?
Aye, sure. Oh, okay. But I'm standing right here, understand?
Sure.
Right. Hey, you, get up and... Oh, brother, look. Ain't nobody gonna ask him no questions.
No, I don't think he's in any shape to answer.
A promotion, you say? A promotion? I'll be lucky if I ain't fouled up for good. This guy's been knifed right under my nose.
That's right. Somebody stabbed Torino. He was as dead as Maria. And nobody saw anybody go in or out of the dressing room. There was one window. It was open. But the officer outside swore he had his eye on it. Nobody in or out. And nobody in the room but Torino. Well, the knife was in his back, so suicide was out. Kling and his boys turned the room upside down. Torino's apparatus and trunks were shoved around. Still nobody. And it turned out nobody had a motive for killing Torino except Billy.
Me? Me? Are you crazy? I never left the stage. I was talking to you. I was answering questions. I can't be in two places at once, can I?
He was so right. Kling was tearing his hair. Then more questions. The rest of the acts were strangers to Torino. Knew nothing about him. I was thinking about it when something hit me. Something Billy had said. While Kling was still firing questions, I got to a phone. Hello? Oh, hiya, Kenny. Still running that private eye? Swell. Do something for me, will you? Okay. Put a man on the Tivoli Theater right now and get him to tail a guy named Billy. Huh? Here's what he looks like. About 5'9", stocky, light complexion, wearing gray suit.
Good morning, Mr. Holiday.
Hiya, Susie. Any messages?
Uh-huh. The detective agency called.
And what? What's the message?
Oh, I wrote it down shorthand. Here. Trail Billy, in shoe, no, wait a minute. Ooh, terrible ink. I got it. To insurance company this morning. He placed claim for double indemnity policy for his wife, Maria Baker. Hey, wait a minute, Mr. Holiday, that's not all.
That's enough. I'll see you later, Susie.
Torino,
Torino.
Step on it, Jonesy.
Oh, you want hard facts? It takes time to find them, even in the morgue of the Star Times.
Okay, Jonesy, okay, but hurry up, will you?
Ah, here we are. Torino, born Italy.
Skip that. How long have you been in the country?
6 months. Noted magician in Italy and Europe before the war.
Only 6 months. Now, Jonesy, if you were a magician, you wanted assistants. How would you get them?
Advertising a billboard, magazine for show folks. What else?
Where can I see the last 6 months' copies of the billboard?
Right, I got a local office in town. All the copies you want. Hey, where you going?
Thanks, Jonesy. Be seeing you. I've got a lot of reading to do. 6 months' copies of the billboard. I looked through every one of them, and when my eyes were falling out of my head, I saw it. An advertisement. The one I wanted. And the one that tied up with something Billy said. And something I saw during Torino's act. I tried to get Kling on the phone, but no dice. He was out. I left word for him to meet me at the Tivoli, and I went there myself. There was nobody there but the watchman. The $5 bill got me in. Oh, there's no place gloomier than backstage in an empty theater. I headed for Torino's dressing room because I had a good idea how someone got in and stabbed Torino, then disappeared. I opened the door, stepped inside. It was dark. The shade on the window must have been down. I was fumbling for the light switch when somebody pulled the shade on me. Oh!
Got any idea who slugged you, Holiday?
Yeah, Kling, I have.
All right, who?
Billy, maybe.
No dice. He didn't come near this place. We had a tail on him.
You know about the insurance?
Sure, but he couldn't have killed his wife because she loaded the blanks into the gun.
Uh-huh. And the medical examiner's report on the bullet that killed her? What about that?
22.
No initials on it?
No, none. So it looks like this Maria deliberately planned her own death. It wasn't an accident. If it had been, the bullet in her head would have been marked.
Kling, put out a dragnet.
For who?
For the one who slugged me.
Now cut it, Holiday. If you know anything, spill it before I lose my temper. Who do you want to pick up?
Here's a description. Young woman, about 26.
26.
Brown hair.
Brown hair.
Lovely blue eyes.
Blue eyes.
About 5'2".
5'2".
Worked as a magician's assistant.
Hey, what are you giving me? That's Maria.
Uh-huh, Maria.
She's dead, you dope.
You mean her twin sister's dead, Kling.
What are you talking about?
The trunk effect Torino worked could have only been done with twins. Billy tipped me off on it.
Billy?
Sure, when he said nobody could be in two places at once. And Torino advertised in the billboard for twins.
You are dreaming this.
Put out a dragnet for Maria.
Who stabbed Torino?
Maria. She got her twin sister to take her place in the rifle trick last night. That's why I didn't get a signal from her. The sister didn't know me from Adam.
Now look, Holiday, we searched this dressing room. There was nobody in it when Torino was stabbed.
Maria was here. Look. False back in his cabinet. Good old magician's gimmick. She was here all the while. Maria and Billy took out an insurance policy on her and planned to make me the patsy. Because I'd testify that she told me Torino hated her, that she was scared. Torino was knifed to keep him from spilling about the twins. Billy was in the clear on that, because he had an alibi when Torino was killed. Okay, Kling?
Okay. We'll put out a dragnet.
And they got her, Mr. Holiday?
Yeah, Susie. They got her.
Gee, sounds just like a story.
Uh-huh.
Only nobody will believe it.
Look, I've got an out on my forehead to prove it. Well, does that make you hysterical?
No, but I was just thinking.
Don't be reckless, Susie. What about?
I was just thinking, with that bump, you'll have to wear off-the-face hats for a while.
You're a great help. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holiday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures and may currently be seen in Wild Harvest. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville with original story by Russell Hughes and original music composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker. This is a Mayfair production.
That's Sylvia. She was a real picker, you know, Lisa?
What did she like to pick, Carl?
I don't know, but her last name was Picker, so, mm-hmm. And her first name was Sylvia.
Mm-hmm.
She was, she played Susie, the kind of scatterbrained yep. secretary to Dan Halliday there, Alan Ladd as Dan Halliday, on Box 13, October 24th, 1948, the Gran Torino. Hope you enjoyed that. That was a really good show. Box 13 was a quality yeah. radio program. All right, in just a few minutes, we'll tune into Father Knows Best. Then Joel McRae stars as Ranger Jace Pearson on Tales of the Texas Rangers. Much more classic radio coming your way, so stick around. All right, Lisa, you know what?
What, Carl?
We're just like a minute away from Father's Day.
You're pretty into the Father's Day thing, huh?
I'm a father three times over that I know of.
Right. I don't know how many times, really, but hopefully your kids will be.
At least three times.
Well, take it. Listen, I'm going to tell your kids to be extra kind to you today.
Yeah, I'm going to spend some time with my youngest.
Good.
Tomorrow.
Good.
We're going to the mall. We're going to Woodfield Mall.
Well, you should be doing something for you tomorrow.
So Father's Day. Here's my Father's Day.
You're going to go spend
money
on your daughter.
My daughter calls me. She's like, Dad, my Apple computer is not working. On Father's Day, can we go to the mall and get it fixed? So that's my Father's Day. But, you know, to me, it's being with her is all I
right.
care about. And then she wants to go to Cheesecake Factory. She loves Cheesecake
well,
Factory.
Why doesn't she say, Dad, where do you want to go? Because that's where we should go for dinner.
Yeah, but I like Cheesecake
Factory. Yeah, but you didn't choose it.
Cheesecake Factory also.
You didn't choose it.
Yeah, so I'm doing that. And then Monday night, I'm taking my son to the Cubs game.
Well, that's good. That's fine.
Yeah, 7:05 game at
that's
Wrigley.
That's some good dad stuff.
Dodgers-Cubs. That's going to be good. Oh, yeah.
Good.
Haven't seen a game all year.
Hopefully it won't be like 97 degrees outside for you.
Yeah. No. Well, it's 7 o'clock at night. I mean, it should be fine.
Yeah.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Oh, if the listeners knew what it was like to have to work with Lisa here.
I'm a lot more fun than you are.
Curtis sees what I have to put up with. Poor Curtis is like, gosh, Carl, you poor thing.
I think
to put up with Lisa.
You are making that up. Because if you ask Curtis, he wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
That's right.
But you know what?
What, Carl?
It's like, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. If you weren't here, I wouldn't have as much fun.
That's for sure.
But man, you are something.
Keep things rolling around.
You do. You're great.
Yeah, thanks.
I wouldn't want to do this show without you, Lisa.
I know.
All right. So in this, hey, happy Father's Day, everybody.
Happy Father's Day. 12:08 on Father's Day in the morning.
Absolutely. In this hour, Father Knows Best
of
with
course.
Robert Young. It was a radio show before it was a TV show. And then in our third hour, Tales of the Texas Rangers. So we have some great radio programs for you still this morning because it is Sunday morning now. Again, happy Father's Day. All right. Let's play our game. Cat's Pride, crack the quote. What's the movie?
The movie is Gran Torino. And the
great
funny thing
movie.
About that is the first hour our Box 13 show was called The Great Torino.
Yeah.
This is Gran Torino, 2008
yeah.
movie.
Clint Eastwood.
Yep. And
great
the,
film.
Yes, it is. And the prize is a family pack of four general admissions to Sycamore Speedway.
Sycamore Speedway.
Yeah, a lot of
fun. Fuckering fuckatash at yeah, Sycamore yeah. Speedway.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. 2018 race season
right,
on the
call
way.
Call us now, 312-591-7200. A little different number just tonight and tomorrow. 591-7200. 312-591-7200. We'll take the seventh caller. Call us right now. We'll play the game live on the air. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hi, Dorothy.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And how about you?
So good.
I love your program.
Thank you. We love that you love it. And we're so glad that you got through. And we're going to play a little Crack the Quote. Have you played with us before?
No, I haven't. I've always wanted to. I never can get through.
Oh, I'm so glad you did it. We're ready to play. Here's your, and you know,
right.
Carl's.
Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, and how you doing?
Great, how are
what
you?
A wonderful show you have.
Thank you so much.
And, you know, we broke Carl's winning streak on Crack the Code on hour one.
We're going to start a new one with
we'll
Dorothy.
Start over. All right, Dorothy, here we go. Number one, come back here and love me. Number two, being ugly is a blessing. Number three, these guys don't want to be your bro, and I don't blame them.
What do you think, Dorothy?
Right. I have to think on that one. I'm 86, but I'm thinking.
Wow.
Can I venture a guess?
Oh, Roger has arrived. Yeah. Go for it, Roger. Hi, Roger.
Hi, guys. Dorothy.
Hi, Roger.
Hi, Dorothy. I'm going to go with number two.
Being ugly is a blessing. Is that what you say, Roger? Yeah,
I feel a oneness with that statement.
I'm right in your pocket.
All right. Dorothy, you like that one, too?
Yes, I like that, too.
Carl?
I don't like that one.
Okay, Carl.
I like number one.
You like number one? Come back here and love me.
Yeah, I like that one.
All right, let's hear
it. We'll go back with number one, then.
All right.
These guys don't want to be your bro, and I don't blame them.
Okay, so it was number three. You guys were so close. We had a one and a two, and it was three. Jeez. But it really doesn't matter. Dorothy's the big winner here. Dorothy, you have won a family pack of four general admissions to Sycamore Speedway. You can get your motor running, it says.
Oh, goodness.
Get your motor running.
Better. Grandchildren would love
that. Oh, good. Well, we're going to get their motor running. It's the 2018 race season. Visit Sycamore Speedway. Speedway.com. Dorothy, it was great to talk to you. Thank you so much for calling in tonight.
It's ever so nice to talk to you people. You are wonderful. You're a joy to your profession.
Thank you. You
Thanks,
sound
Dorothy.
So sweet, too. Really, it's a pleasure.
Appreciate you.
I'm looking forward to listening to the next two programs.
All right.
Knows best. And I love Joel McRae, and I loved when he was married to Frances D.
Yeah, he sure was. He was a lucky guy. I'll say it.
You better believe it. Well, have a happy, happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
I'll give you a belated happy Mother's Day.
Ah, thank you. I'll take that, too. And same to you.
All righty.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye, Dorothy. All right, it is time for Father Knows Best, a situation comedy show primarily remembered as a TV series. It started on radio, though. People don't realize it. It started on radio way back in 1949. This series was set in the Midwest. Robert Young played General Insurance Agent Jim Anderson. His wife, Margaret, his daughters, Betty and Kathy, and his son, Bud, were part of the TV sitcom fare, and the radio show lasted until 1954. That's the same year it moved to television. And the TV version lasted until 1960. We have a great broadcast for you now called Ranch Inheritance. It stars Robert Young. Let's go back to February 1st, 1951. Here's part one of Father Knows Best.
Mother, is Maxwell House really the only coffee in the world?
Well, your father says so, and your father knows best.
Yes, it's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as Father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons, brought to you by America's favorite coffee, Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. We once knew a man who was extremely wealthy, and he had a wonderful system for acquiring money, which we think will interest you. He was up every morning at 6, worked 14 hours a day, 7 days a week for almost 20 years. And then, when he was only 45 years of age, his uncle died and left him $3 million. Wasn't that nice? Of course, a thing like that would never happen to our friends the Andersons, but it almost did. Yes, sir, they came awfully close to being the richest family in Springfield. Like this.
I know, Frank, but I don't care what Gribble says. Look, Frank, Van Norton's willing to give us the land, and if the committee isn't willing to take it... Okay, Frank, okay. And you can tell Gribble for me that he's nothing but a pig-headed old goat. He's nothing but a self-centered, stubborn old jackass, that's what he is.
Is something wrong, dear?
Oh, that Gribble. He's killing the whole deal I worked out for the playground.
Jim, I wish you wouldn't take it so much to heart. After all, it isn't your responsibility.
Well, that isn't the point. I talked Van Norton into giving 10 acres of land for the playground. Giving it, mind you. And Gribble won't even take it. Says there must be something wrong with it.
But can't you tell the rest of the committee?
Margaret, I have told them. I've told them until I'm blue in the face.
Well, maybe if you talk to Mr. Gribble again.
Gribble, how can you talk to a lunatic? All you have to do is mention the name Van Norton and his nose lights up like a pinball machine.
I still say you've done everything you could.
Well, I'm not licked yet. I may not have as much money as Gribble, but I've got a lot more sense.
Of course you have, dear.
I suppose you think I haven't.
Jim, there's no point in arguing with me.
Well, there isn't anybody else around to argue with.
All right, dear, if it makes you feel any better.
Hello, Mother. Hello, Father.
Hello, Miss Hepburn.
Betty.
Betty, if you're going to start spouting poetry, I'm warning you right now.
Isn't this the most beautiful day you've ever seen?
Beautiful? It's snowing.
Snow.
Darling, I think you've picked a very bad time.
Floating to earth like feathers from an angel's wing.
Margaret, in exactly one
Betty,
minute.
Betty, I think you'd better go up to your room.
But I didn't do anything.
You deliberately disobeyed me. I told you I was in no mood for any of that hogwash.
Father!
And that's all it is, hogwash.
Oh, I'm too happy to argue. If you say it's hogwash, it's hogwash.
Well, I'm glad somebody's happy around here.
Mother, do you know where I'm going next Friday?
No, dear.
To see a picture with Van Johnson.
Who's Van Johnson?
He's a Hollywood star, dear.
Oh, that one. You mean he's taking Betty to the movies?
Father.
Well, you just said...
He's in the picture. I'm going with Stanley Lawson.
Oh. Who's he?
He's a new one, dear, and a very nice boy.
He's wonderful.
Now I know what they mean by 9-day wonders. Betty's boyfriend.
Aren't they, though?
Hi, everybody. What's cooking?
Oh.
Jim, now what is it?
Why does everybody have to be so happy?
Boy, will you hear what we're gonna do?
Hello, Bud.
Joe Phillips and I bought a half interest in a corn popper, and we're gonna clean up.
Hello, Bud.
We're gonna set up a stand outside the movies and sell popcorn to all the kids. How's that for an idea?
Bud.
And all we have to... What?
I said hello.
Oh, hi, Dan. And all we have to do is find some place to plug it in.
Plug what in, dear?
The corn popper.
What corn popper?
The one I bought with Joe Phillips. You see, we bought a half interest in a corn
popper. But don't you know when you're being kidded?
About what?
The corn popper.
What corn popper?
Oh, no.
Oh, gosh. I don't say anything funny about our corn popper. All I
All said right, was... Bud. Just forget the whole thing.
But I can't. I have to supply the salt.
Daddy! Mommy!
Oh, dear.
Now what? Well, if it isn't William Jennings Bryan.
Kathleen, how many times have I told you?
Oh, Daddy, I was elected. Isn't it wonderful?
All right, now, just calm down. Take it easy.
I was elected.
To what were you elected?
I'm the treasurer. They had an election, and I'm the treasurer.
The treasurer? Say, Kathy...
Bud, not the first day. Take it easy.
Well, I was just thinking.
Margaret, do you know what this is all about?
Why, of course, dear. Kathy was elected treasurer.
Margaret, of what?
My club, Daddy. The Little Vultures.
The little who?
Vultures. It's a kind of bird. And I'm the treasurer.
Wait a minute. Where did you ever dig up a name like that?
Well...
I'll be back later, Mom. I gotta go...
Bud, see... come back here.
Holy cow.
Were you the one who cooked up this delightful little tag for Kathy's club?
Well, gosh, Dad, they said they wanted some kind of a bird's name, and... Well, have you ever watched them?
We like it, Daddy. We even made Bud an honorary vulture.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer boy.
Betty.
Never mind, Betty. I'll get it. The little vultures. Leave it to my children. Hello? Oh, hello, Hector. What? Well, thank you very much. Oh, sure. I'm the luckiest guy in town. Sure. Okay, Heck. I'll be seeing you. Congratulations. There ever was a guy who needed congratulations less.
Who was it, Jim?
Hector Smith. He wants to extend his heartiest congratulations. Isn't that nice?
About what, dear?
He didn't say.
Maybe he heard about me.
He's known about you for years, and believe me, that isn't what he meant.
Jim, I won't be able to sleep a wink all night. Why don't I call Elizabeth back?
Well, I guess you won't have to. Maybe this time our dear friend Hector will let us all in on the joke. Some joke. Hello, Heck. Oh, George. I'm sorry, George. You see, Heck called me a minute ago, and I thought... Well, thank you, George, but I don't know what... George. No, we're not having any celebration. We don't even know... George. Hello, George. Oh, fine.
Was it Hector?
No, it was George Phillips. He's very happy for us.
What on earth do you suppose it means?
I don't know, but if those guys are having a good time at our expense...
I'll get it.
You stay where you are. I'll find out what this is about if it takes all night. And if that's the kind of friends I've got... Hello? Hello?
Jim, it was the front door.
Oh. Get a man so mixed up he doesn't know what bell is ringing. After a while, I'll probably hear bells when nothing's ringing. Yes?
Mr. Anderson?
Yes?
Well, my name is Ford. Richard Ford. Of the legal firm of McGonagall, Bristol, and Finch.
Oh? Well, come in, Mr.
Ford.
Mr. Ford.
Thank you very much.
Jim, if it's the paper boy, tell him I'll pay him next time.
It wasn't the paper boy, honey.
Is that Mrs. Anderson?
Yeah, she's in the living room, but...
Well, why don't we tell her the good news?
What good news?
All in good time, Mr. Anderson. All in good time. Mrs. Anderson.
Oh,
and all the little Andersons.
Honey, this is Mr. Ford of,
McGonagall, Bristol, and Finch. Attorneys. How do you do?
Well, how do you do?
Sit down, Mr. Ford.
Thank you.
Why don't you kids find something to do, someplace?
Oh, no. Let them stay, by all means. After all, this concerns the entire family. Doesn't it?
What does?
Yes, indeed. Now, Annie, you are related to Joseph James Anderson, are you not?
Yes, I am not.
What's that?
I've never even heard of any Joseph James Anderson.
Well, now that's very strange. I had it on very good authority that, Robert Bruce Anderson, perhaps?
It was my father, but...
Oh, I knew I hadn't made a mistake. Mr. Anderson, Joseph James Anderson was your father's cousin, once removed.
Oh, you mean Cousin Joe.
Precisely.
We haven't heard anything about him for, 30 years. Matter of fact, I think he died about 20 years ago, didn't he?
No, Mr. Anderson. Joseph James Anderson passed from this vale of tears less than a month ago.
That's impossible. Why, he was over 70 when he decided to run away from home and go to Arizona.
He died last week at the age of 102.
Well, you see, my father always said he smoked too much. The poor old coot.
The poor old coot, you may be interested to know, made you his sole heir.
Jim!
Father!
Daddy!
No, don't get excited. If I know Cousin Joe, we've inherited 3 barrels of bottle tops. Betty?
Father, isn't it the most wonderful thing you've ever heard?
The phone's ringing.
I've never been so excited in my whole life.
Pardon me, Mr. Ford, while I answer the phone.
Well, that's quite all right.
If I help me next summer, I'm going to spend my vacation in a nice, quiet boiler factory. Hello? Oh, hello, Mr. Gribble. Well, thank you very much. Now, about the Van Norton land... Well, naturally, I, advice about what investments? You want my advice? Well, if you think I'm qualified to, All right, J.P. At 12:30 tomorrow. Yeah, see you then. Goodbye. He wants my advice?
Jim, we're waiting for you.
Oh, that was Mr. Gribble, honey. He wants me to give him some advice on his investments.
Well, let's talk about it later, dear. Mr. Ford wants to tell us about the inheritance.
Why don't you sit down, Father? Here's a cushion, Daddy.
Want me to run out for a cigar, Dad?
Look, I just finished telling you not to get excited. I know Cousin Joe, and he never had a dime in his whole life.
Well, that may be true, Mr. Anderson, but if you'll be good enough to sign this retainer, I'll be happy to tell you about the estate.
Well, okay. What is it, 4 barrels of bottle tops?
It's a 15,000-acre cattle ranch, Mr. Anderson.
A ranch?
15,000 acres?
With a possible value of $9 million.
Jim! Father! Gosh!
Boy!
Holy cow!
That's quite a bit of money back then, and even more money now. So that's the first portion of Father Knows Best. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Thanks, Roger. We are here every Saturday from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. And now our new time on Sundays. We're 1 hour less. We're 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. So 2 hours on Sunday.
Starting today.
Yep. 2 hours on Sunday night. And we have 3 full hours on Saturday night. So we are listening to Father Knows Best. But Lisa wanted to mention something about a... did you want to mention something about a play?
Well, you know what? This is really cool. This is a Broadway and Chicago promotion. So in celebration of an outstanding achievement for high school musical theater performances, Broadway in Chicago has announced the award recipients for the 7th Annual High School Musical Theater Awards, which are sponsored by NBC. So we had a Best Actor winner. His name is Darian Goulding. He's from Hampshire, Illinois, and he did the portrayal of the Beast from Beauty and the Beast. And we have a Best Actress Award. Her name is Natalie Doppelt. She's from Deerfield High School, and she did Sister Mary Robert from Sister Act. So they will represent the state of Illinois at the Jimmy Awards, which will be in New York on June 25th, 2018. What a wonderful program sponsored by Broadway in Chicago.
Okay. All right. Let's get back now to Father Knows Best.
A week's gone by and the white frame house on Maple Street hasn't changed a bit. That's the same snow on the front lawn, the same slippery spot on the porch that Jim's going to fix next Sunday. Everything's just as it's always been, except for the people. Yes, the Andersons have changed a little, I'm afraid. Not much, but a little. Like this.
Oh, that's fine, Frank. Oh, sure. Well, it really wasn't anything, Frank. That'll be fine, Frank. Sure, Wednesday's as good a night as any. You bet, Frank. Good night, Frank.
What did Charlie have to say, dear?
That was Frank.
Oh, how is George?
You're so cute. It may interest you to know, Mrs. Millionaires Anderson, that your husband is being given a testimonial dinner next Wednesday.
No.
Yeah.
Jim, how perfectly wonderful. What for?
Why, for putting through the playground. That's what for. It's all signed, sealed, and delivered.
Jim, that is wonderful.
Boy, what a playground that's going to be.
You and Mr. Van Norton have done a wonderful thing for Springfield, and I'm proud of you both.
Well, you know how it is with us rich men.
Jim, do you know what I'm going to do with our first million? I'm going to buy Bud some new socks.
Good for you.
I have never seen a boy so hard on socks in my whole life. Look at this.
Honey, speaking of millions...
Yes, dear?
Don't be too surprised if Cousin Joe's ranch comes to less than Mr. Ford said.
I was only joking, dear.
I know. But when he said 9 million, that was only if each acre was a whole unit.
I didn't understand that very well, Jim. What was that unit business?
It's very simple, honey. In the cattle country, a unit is the amount of land required to feed a cow and her calf for 1 year. That's the way they figure.
And that's worth $600.
Mm-hmm, roughly.
Then why do you say it might be less? 15,000 times 600.
Margaret, we aren't sure about the land. Maybe an acre won't feed a cow and a calf for a year. It might take two or three.
Jim, really?
Well, it might. And if it takes 3 acres to make up a unit, then each acre's worth only $200. And the ranch is worth only a third. Or $3 million.
Oh, dear. We just have to get a smaller swimming pool, that's all.
Yeah. It might even take 10 acres to make a unit.
Well, Jim, let's not be ridiculous. After all, how much can a cow and one small calf eat?
I don't know. But if it did take 10 acres, well, that'd make it $60 an acre. And $15,000, we'd only have $900,000.
Wouldn't that be awful?
You know, I've got a good mind.
Jim, please. Front door open.
It would.
Bud?
It's me, Mother.
We're in the den, dear.
What's the matter with you?
Oh, Father. You got lipstick on your chin.
I have, huh? Somebody must have bit me.
Creepers, isn't this a miserable day?
Why, Betty, I thought you said...
Snow. All it ever does in this town is snow.
Wait a minute, Sugar. Let's get it out in the open. What happened?
Oh, it isn't important. I didn't want to go to the movies anyway.
So that's what it is.
What's what is?
She had a quarrel with Stanley Lawson.
I didn't either. It's all Father's fault.
My fault? What did I do?
He liked me when we were poor, but just because you had to go and get $9 million...
Now, wait a minute. In the first place, we weren't exactly poor. And in the second place, we've got the $9 million nicely whittled down to practically nothing.
You have?
It might even be less than $1 million.
Oh. Well, what good is that? He still won't take me. He says he can't afford loge seats.
Why, Betty.
I told him I didn't mind, but he says girls with $9 million always sit in loge seats.
Naturally. They save a whole row for girls with $9 million. It's the row right in back of the girls with $10 million.
Jim.
Well, this is the silliest thing I've ever heard. We haven't collected a dime. My bank book looks like an undernourished flapjack. And Stanley Lawson won't go out with my daughter because she's got $9 million.
Betty, don't you think if you explain to him that nothing has really changed?
But it has. Everything's changed.
Bud?
Hello, Dad.
Not another one.
Is anything wrong, dear?
Ah, that Joe Phillips. What a pain he turned out to be.
Something amiss with the popcorn tycoons?
Well, why should I supply all the butter? I bought the salt, didn't I?
We were all so happy when we were poor.
He even had it figured out how many pounds of butter you can buy with $9 million.
Aye, I'll bet that'll fix all the popcorn from here to Lowe's, Calcutta.
Bud, if you and Betty don't take these things too seriously, I'm sure...
Mommy!
Oh, ye gods, now what?
Why, Kathy, darling, what is it?
They kicked me out of the club.
Oh, Angel.
Margaret, why don't you let me... Kathy, why did they kick you out of the club?
They won't let me be a little vulture.
Never mind them, sweetheart. No one can keep you from being a little vulture. Well, you know what. Kathy, does our mythical $9 million have anything to do with your expulsion from the club?
Uh-huh. They said it was too suspicious.
What was?
They made me the treasurer, and the next day you had $9 million.
I don't know.
And they said I could never be the treasurer again. And I had to give back the whole 13 cents.
We're outcasts. That's what we are. Nothing but social outcasts.
Fine. Tell us all about it right after you answer the phone.
No, Jim, wait. Betty, why don't you take Kathy upstairs and get her cleaned up?
Okay. Come on, blabberface.
Oh, Betty, I was so happy being the treasurer.
Bye, the phone's ringing.
You want me, Dad?
Where did you go?
All of a sudden, I got hungry. You want me to answer the phone?
No, never mind. Either they all answer it at once or they let the darn thing ring for an hour. Well, keep your shirt on. I'm coming. Hello? Hello, Heck. No, we were just sitting around having fun. I can't hear you, Heck. Sorry about what bad news? We haven't heard anything about any... Heck. Okay, Heck. Sure. If it'll make you happy, I'll keep the lower lip stiff, too. Thanks for calling, Heck. Goodbye. Gloomy character. Sounds like he just got a good look at the thing.
Who was it, Jim?
Hector. He heard the sad news, and he's very sorry.
What sad news, dear?
You don't suppose he's the field secretary for the little vultures, do you? Every time something happens to Kathy and the vultures, Heck's on the phone. Oh, my aching ears.
Why don't you let me get it this time?
No, I'll carry through to the bitter end. Better Mousetrap Anderson, that's me. One more trip to the phone and I get permanent possession. Hello. Hello, George. Thank you very much, George. Goodbye, George. This can go on all night.
What did George want, dear?
Same thing. Bad news. Keep a stiff upper lip. Pip, pip, tally-ho.
Well, the least you could have done was ask him what bad news.
And play straight for those two practical jokers? Margaret, I'm surprised. You've known Heck and George as long as I have.
They were both perfectly sincere last time, Jim.
Say, that's right. They were, weren't they? Maybe I'd better call them back.
Jim, this time it's the doorbell.
Thank you very much. Treat a man like he needs a seeing-eye door opener. Oh, hello, Mr. Ford.
Well, Mr. Anderson.
We were sort of hoping we'd hear from you. Come on in.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a busy week.
I'll bet you have. Honey, it's Mr. Ford.
Hello there.
Mrs. Anderson, how are you?
Go right into the den, Mr. Ford.
Thank you. Yeah, this is a comfy little spot, isn't it?
Why don't you sit at the desk, Mr. Ford, and then you can spread out all your papers and things.
Well, that would be nice.
Let me get a couple of cushions for you.
Oh, no, this will be fine, just fine. Yeah, now.
Yes?
Well, first, here's the receipt for your $100 retaining fee.
All that.
It's very important, you know, all these little details. Let me see now. The ranch.
If you haven't anything else on your mind.
Jim, please.
Well, you must be very anxious.
Of course not. What do we care for a couple of $1 million, more or less?
Well, Jimmy, I'm afraid you're going to be just a little disappointed. You see, when I said $9 million,
Mr. Ford, how much is it worth?
Well, you remember what I told you about the unit system? One cow and one calf for 1 year?
Yes.
Well, on your cousin Joe's ranch, it seems that one cow and one calf need quite a bit of land.
How much?
1,200 acres.
1,200?
Oh, Jim.
Which makes the value of the land 50 cents an acre.
Oh, Jim.
Well, that isn't too bad, honey. We'll have a ranch to go to every summer, and all it cost us is the $100 we gave Mr. Ford.
And Mr. Anderson, as your legal advisor, may I suggest that you forget the whole thing?
Forget it?
Well, you see, the land is only worth $7,500.
Well, what's wrong with $7,500?
Well, nothing except that we found a bill for $8,200 in back taxes.
Oh, no!
This weekend, as you buy coffee for your family, remember this. In coffee, just one thing means real value. The flavor you get for your money. With this in mind, take home the coffee with the most famous flavor in the world, our Maxwell House coffee. Then let the world's greatest coffee expert enjoy that famous flavor. Yes, serve our Maxwell House to your husband. He's the real authority on coffee. When he smiles and says, "Greatest coffee ever," you'll know Maxwell House has the flavor for you and your family. And for value, well, count for yourself all the truly good cups of coffee you get from every pound. Tomorrow, buy coffee that gives you your money's worth and more. Look for America's sign of good coffee, the big white cup and drop on the friendly blue tin. That's Maxwell House coffee. Always good to the last drop. Remember François Villon? He was king for a day. Remember the Andersons? They were millionaires for a whole week, which is nice work if you can get it. Anyway, they're back to normal now, if you can call anything connected with the Andersons normal. Like this.
Wasn't Jimmy Woody sweet, Mommy?
Yes, dear.
He said he didn't care what anybody said. If I wasn't a little vulture, nobody was.
That's my girl.
Isn't this the most beautiful day you've ever seen?
She saw Van Johnson, huh?
Well, she went to the show with Stanley, but I think that's all she saw, Stanley.
Dad, I got the plaque all polished up. How does it look?
Oh, fine, Bud, just fine.
Let me see it again, please. Oh, Jim, isn't it beautiful?
Now, where do you think we ought to put it, honey?
Well, in the den, naturally. To James Anderson, Sr., for outstanding service to the youth of Springfield. Isn't that nice?
You know, it's a funny thing, Margaret, but I've got a peculiar feeling that the plaque isn't all mine.
What do you mean, dear?
Well, I wasn't getting anywhere until that silly inheritance came along. You know what I'm going to do?
You're not going to give it back.
Oh, no, no, no. But down here on the bottom, I'm going to put a little sticker that says, with one assist from Cousin Joe.
At breakfast time, you don't have to say,
you children eat your cereal right this instant.
Just say,
Hopalong Cassidy is crazy about hot wheat meal.
Just a little psychology. Yes, to get your children to eat a hot cereal, just tell them post-wheat meal is Hopalong Cassidy's favorite hot cereal. And they'll eat it too. Post-wheat meal is chock full of solid whole wheat nourishment, has a wonderful nut-like flavor, and it cooks in just 3.5 minutes. You'll see, you'll all agree, it's the best hot cereal you ever ate. Join us again next week when we'll be back with Father Knows Best, starring Robert Young as Jim Anderson, with Roy Bargy and the Maxwell House Orchestra. In our cast were Rhoda Williams as Betty, June Whitley, Ted Donaldson, Norma Jean Nielsen, Howard McNair, and yours truly, Bill Foreman. So until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's favorite brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop. Father Knows Best was transcribed in Hollywood and written by Ed James. Now stay tuned in for Dragnet, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
Coming up, Dragnet. Then be sure to hear Counterspy on NBC.
I would listen to that. I would listen to Dragnet and then Counterspy.
I was thinking when I was listening to the music shows. That even the music is wholesome.
Yeah.
It just
well,
is.
His father knows best.
I know, but the music just goes along with that same family wholesome feel.
You know, I've noticed, though, when you listen to the radio episodes of Father Knows Best, he was kind of crabby. And on the TV show, he was really,
really,
really
warm,
nice
and
warm and sweet. I think this was this like his character on the radio was a little different than so that'd be like us.
More like you.
If we had a TV show, it'd be so much less crabby.
Yeah, well, I'm still waiting for that day.
Yeah.
I mean, the less crabby day.
We need a TV show.
And the less crabby
Carl. Listen, if somebody out there has a big television station, they want to offer us a TV show.
Then you won't be crabby.
I won't be as crabby.
I don't know if I can believe you, but I'll hope for that.
I promise I won't be. I'll be so not crabby.
I don't know if that's possible, but okay.
Yeah.
What do you call the show? Father Kinda Knows Something?
What? Father is Crabby is the name of the show. Father is Crabby.
We'll just call it Carl for short, same thing.
It kind of gives it all away.
That broadcast was February 1st, 1951. Robert Young starring. It was originally sponsored by Maxwell House Coffee. Remember, Robert Young not only played Marcus Welby, M.D., but didn't he do a bunch of Maxwell House commercials.
I remember him in the commercials.
So he had a long association with Maxwell House because here they are sponsoring his radio program in 1951.
He knows how to do it right. That's what you do.
Yeah. He had a great relationship with Maxwell House Coffee. Right. That's for sure. Remember Joe DiMaggio used to do...
didn't he do Mr. Coffee?
I do remember
him. Remember those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of coffee people out there.
Joe DiMaggio. Yeah.
What was the Swedish lady who did the coffee wasn't good enough, and or the her friend, the neighbor, would come in and say, my coffee, he just won't drink my coffee. And the lady with the Swedish-type accent said, well, why don't you try, and I forgot what the coffee brand is.
Your story's falling short, Roger.
Wait, hang on a second.
Crickets. No, you can't. What are you whistling? What are you trying to do? It's crickets. Thank you. There you go. Who's doing that?
Is that better?
That's me.
Okay. Yeah. I'll figure it out.
All right. Let's take a break while Roger figures this out. We'll be right back.
Thanks, Roger.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hour three. Thanks for staying up late with us, folks. It is 1:08 in the morning. This is the WGN Radio Theater every Saturday and Sunday night, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. on Saturdays, and 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. on Sundays. 5 hours of the best in classic radio right here, the greatest radio station in the world, WGN. My co-host Lisa Wolf here. We have Roger Badish up there in the newsroom. And in this hour, it is Tales of the Texas Rangers starring Joel McRae. A great broadcast from 1951. True crime story, Lisa. And that will be coming your way in just a minute. But right now it's time to play Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What is the movie?
Judgment at Nuremberg.
Oh, yeah. That's going way back.
Yeah, 1961.
Yeah. You were what, 12, 14?
15.
15. Okay. So what is the prize?
Oh, the prize, a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling,
Those are very cool. Yeah, very cool. All right, the number to call, a little different number, 312-591-7200, 312-591-7200, and we will take the fifth caller. Call us now, play the game on the air. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote. Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hi, Connie. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you guys?
Great. Glad you made it through. We're going to play a little Crack the Quote.
Okay.
You ready to go?
Ready.
All right. Number one. Roger, are you listening in?
Yes, I am.
Okie doke. Number one, be strong enough to stand up for something. Number two, this is what we stand for, justice, truth, and the value of a single human being. Number three, fall 7 times and stand up 8.
Whoa. Well, I like number 2.
Number 2. This is what we stand for, justice, truth, and the value of a single human being. Roger, you like that one?
Yeah, I like that. Sounds like it's from the movie.
All right, Carl?
I think it's number 3.
I like number 3, too. That would be my second choice.
Fall 7 times and stand up 8. I like that one, too.
That's good
Let's
advice.
Listen.
This is what we stand for. Justice, truth, and the value of a single human being.
See, Connie, you have to go with your first instinct. Oh, you got it right. Roger, you followed suit.
I've watched that movie quite a few times.
And Carl, had an off night.
Listen, I just stink, period.
But you have more chances. Connie, we are so thrilled to give you the desktop indoor weather station. It is brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-Minute Men. You can give them a call at 855-955-HVAC. Congratulations. You're going to love it.
Thank you so much.
Thank
really
you.
Thanks,
Thank
Connie.
You for playing.
Way to go. All right, so Connie's a big winner, and so are all of our listeners, because we're going to tune in to Tales of the Texas Rangers. And this was a modern Western series, Lisa, like its predecessor, Dragnet. Tales of the Texas Rangers adapted actual police case histories, and which I always thought was fascinating, because these police departments let the producers of these radio shows rifle through their files of closed cases, and they'd be like, oh, this looks like a good one, you know, and they would dramatize it. But it was great for the listener, too, because they were actual cases. I mean, these were not made-up stories. And the main ranger on each of these stories was Texas Ranger Jace Pearson, and he was always portrayed by Joel McRae. And these stories were present day, so in the 1950s when these were being aired, these stories were about the 1950s, not way back in the Western olden days of the 1800s. This was produced and directed by our buddy Stacy Keach's dad, Stacy Keach Sr. Yeah. The show ran from 1950 to 1952. Let's tune this in. Let's go back to March 11th, 1951 for Blind Justice. Here's Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers.
Presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles, and 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. From the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, Blind Justice.
It is 5:45 a.m., March 6, 1940. Pete Salverson, owner of a roadside cafe in West Texas, is opening for business. As he sweeps up in the kitchen, he hears a sound outside the back door.
Somebody out back there? That you, Charlie? Well, what's the matter, boy? Where'd you come from? Come on, feller. Come on, I ain't gonna hurt you. Atta boy. Looks like you got here too early to root for anything out of that garbage can, though. And them ribs of yours look like you could use some grub fast. Hey, now, none of that face licking. You just come on inside and I'll fix you up. Come on. Come on. Let's see. How about this? That is bone and a couple of hunks of stew meat, huh? All right, fella. Here you are. Dig into that. Well, boy, you sure are beat up and hungry. What's this contraption you got strapped on you?
Pete, you open yet?
Oh, howdy, Sheriff.
How's the coffee situation?
Well, ain't brewed yet, but I can fix some up in a minute. Had an early customer here.
Yeah, but he hasn't got any money. I'm a cash customer. Where'd you get him?
Oh, he's rooting in the garbage cans out back. What you doing up and around so early?
I just come back from Huntsville. Delivered a prisoner up there yesterday.
Huh?
Hey, that'd be a pretty good-looking dog if he was taken care of. Who owns him?
I don't know. Never seen him before. Never did see a leash like the one he's wearing, either. Kind of funny contraption. Look at it.
Hey, let's see that.
What's the matter, Sheriff?
Well, this ain't a leash. It's a harness. Huh? This here dog's a C&I dog.
One of them dogs is trained to lead blind people?
Sure is.
He must have run off from his master, then.
Well, these dogs don't run off, Pete. I had a missing persons bulletin on a blind man 3 days ago. This might be his dog.
Well, the guy that's missing must be around here, then, huh?
Well, if he is, something must have happened to him. This dog never would have left him. Say, you got change for a dollar in the register?
Oh, sure thing.
I'm going to hit that phone and get a ranger down here to help. Wherever that dog's master is, I got a hunch we'd better find him quick.
Less than 1 hour after the sheriff's appeal for help, Texas Ranger Jace Pearson joined him at Pete Salveson's roadside cafe.
Well, there he is, Ranger. No mistake in that harness if you ever seen one before.
It's a C&I dog, all right. You say you found him outside this morning, Salverson?
Yeah, half starved, like you can see.
Been a good 3 or 4 days since he's eaten from the looks of him. Easy, boy. Come here. Nobody's gonna hurt you. Oh, I'm sorry, fella. It's really sore, isn't it? He's had a bad time, Sheriff. Got a pretty hard clip on the head. Must have been knocked out. Since then, he's traveled through some rough country. Ichigia's got him all sliced up. Footpads are sore from walking.
Yeah, but ever since Pete fed him, he's been yelling to get out of here. Reckon he'll be able to lead us back to his master?
He'll try if he can make it. We'll have a better chance if a veterinarian works him over first. Where's the nearest one?
Foreman at the Wolverine Ranch is a vet. Want to take him out there?
Yeah. Meanwhile, you better get yourself a horse. I'll leave my horse trailer here until I get back. You can load your mount in with my horse Charcoal. It's a double trailer.
What makes you think we'll need horses?
In the country this dog came through isn't the kind we'll be able to get through in a car. And he came too far for us to follow on foot.
Lost dogs sometimes head for home, Jace. Missing persons bulletin came from Ozona in Crockett County. Dog may be headed for there.
Only way we'll find out's to follow him. If he heads any other way, it'll be back toward the man he's been trained to take care of. I'm figuring that'll be in a southerly direction from here.
Well, how do you know that?
All barren country that way, full of lechuguilla. If he came such a long way from any other direction, he'd have run into a town or a ranch and been found before this.
I reckon I'll buy that. That makes sense.
Get your horse. I'll meet you back here, and we'll drive as far south as we can cross-country and then turn this dog loose and follow him. I got the dog patched up at the Wolverine Ranch, picked up the sheriff and his horse, and headed south into the Badlands. We switched from car to our horses and turned the dog loose. He circled around for a moment, got his bearings, and then, despite the soreness of his body, started into a limping run.
He's heading south, all right, Jace. Must be going to his master. Beats me why he went all the way to Peach Place, though.
He had to go someplace for help. But the only thought he gave to himself was just stopping long enough to be fed before he headed back here.
How far do you reckon we'll have to go?
Well, we came 14 miles by car before the dirt road petered out. He came a lot farther than that. Might have taken him a couple of days.
Well, we'll have to stop him at night if he keeps going that long and tie him off. We better make sure we can catch him before dark so he don't get away from us altogether.
Chances are he'll wait for us. After all, we're the help he came after. If he doesn't, we'll be able to follow him anyhow.
In the dark?
Yeah. I treated his collar with some phosphorus paint.
Hey, whatever made you think of that?
Trick my father taught me a long time ago. He had an old hound dog, great hunter. Got a throat injury and couldn't sound off. Glowing collar made up for it.
Well, like they say, we live and learn.
Hey, look. Look where the dog's cutting, up in the foothills.
Yeah.
That's Ambush Canyon that way, isn't it?
Sure is. Say, no wonder that dog's so beat up. I wouldn't tackle this country in an army tank if I didn't have to. I wonder if that blind fellow'll be alive when we find him.
I don't think so, Sheriff. If he was alive, I don't think the dog would ever have left him. Come on, Sharky. What kept that dog going, I'll never know. We hit stretches where we had to lead the horses on foot. It was toward sundown of the second day when the dog caved in. He made a feeble attempt to inch along on his stomach and then just rolled over on his side, panting.
He's done for, Jace. Can't even take water. I better...
No, Sheriff. Put your gun away.
But, Jace, he couldn't move another inch if he wanted to.
I'll carry him with me on Charcoal. Man'd be mighty lucky if he could find a human being that'd go this far for him.
He'd never have led us this far back if you hadn't had the vet work on him. Well, what do we do now?
Keep on going, I guess. If his master is in here, he must have left some trail. We'll keep cutting through till we find marks.
Jace, how would a blind man get into this country and why?
I don't know. But if he wasn't here, the dog wouldn't have been here either. We better move on till we find a good spot to make camp. These horses need some attention and a night of rest, too. Meantime, maybe I can do a little doctoring on the dog.
Won't do any good, Jace. All you'll need's a pack shovel. Just stop breathing. He's dead.
The next morning, we started trail cutting, working steadily to the south, toward the international border, the Rio Grande.
The country's getting a mite better now, Jace, but we're only about a half a mile from the river. If anybody else had been in here recently, we'd have seen some sign of a trail. Nobody could come through here without leaving some kind of tracks.
And dog didn't head this way for nothing, Sheriff. He must have... Hey, hold it a second.
Huh? What is it?
Look at this. Dog hair caught in this thorn brush.
Yeah.
Must have been a few days ago when the dog headed out. Look at the color. German Shepherd, all right.
We're still in the right trail, then. But why no human tracks?
Well, the dog came out of here on foot. But this may not be the way he and his master got in here originally.
What other way is there?
On the river, in a raft, or a flat-bottom boat?
Well, how could a blind man navigate the river?
He didn't have to be alone, Sheriff. That dog was beaten on the head, remember? It isn't likely his master did that, is it?
No, I see what you mean, but how...
Now, wait a minute. Look up ahead there, along the side of the ridge, about a quarter of a mile.
Yeah, looks like part of the rock and the earth have been scooped out. Must have been a little landslide.
Not on a rock facing as solid as that looks.
What do you suppose it is, then?
Let's find out. It took us more than an hour to reach the base of the ridge and find the answer. It wasn't a landslide. There were a couple of dynamite caps on the ground. The fresh earth had been blown out.
Two men, all right, Jace. Signs of tracks held tight in this fresh earth.
Dog tracks go right along with the one set. That was the blind man.
Yeah, another mark running in with those tracks, though. Little round hole in the ground every few steps.
The blind man must have had a cane, too. Move around the wide circle and cut back to this spot. And
wait, Jace. Hmm? What's that thing over there by the brush? Long white piece or something?
A white cane. Come on.
A head of it stained, Jace. Looks like blood.
Yeah, it is.
The dog must have been clubbed with that.
Bloodstains didn't come from the dog, Sheriff. The lump he had on his head didn't bleed. Let's beat through this brush.
Blood trail on the ground through here, Jace.
Yeah. That path just ahead seems to be pressed down in one spot. Let's make for it.
A man's body, all right. Face down. Better roll him over and see if it's a blind man.
It's him, all right. You can tell by his right hand. Callous ridge there from holding onto that dog harness. I took the white cane and the dynamite caps and rode along the shore of the river to the nearest town. Called Austin to fly a lab man down and arrange for a boat to pick up the sheriff and the body. I was in the local constable's office 24 hours later when the body was brought into town.
Well... Body's over the undertaker, Jace.
Good.
Constable told me you were in here looking over a report from your lab man.
Yeah. No lead on the dynamite caps, but we learned plenty from the cane. Two sets of prints, one unidentified. Must have been the blind man's.
Now what about the other set?
Man who left the other set had a criminal record. Name was James Waterman. Got out of Huntsville 6 years ago.
Waterman? Say, I remember that name.
You ought to remember it. He pulled 10 years for armed robbery. $40,000 payroll stick-up back in 24. Money never was recovered.
I wonder why he killed that blind man. And why was he blasting in the face of that rock ridge?
Something we'll ask him when we get him. Oh, was the lab man at the funeral home when you brought the body in?
Yeah, he's going over it now. Want to get some grub while you're waiting for him to finish?
Yeah. You take prints off the body to compare with the ones he lifted from the cane. He'll have identification established by the time we get through.
Good. Let's go. I'll be glad to eat something I haven't had to cook myself. You know, funny thing, we started off so fast after that dog turned up the other day, I never did check that missing persons bulletin for the blind man's name.
His name was Joseph Wilson. Lived in a rooming house in Ozona, operated a newsstand. Landlady reported him missing when she didn't see him or the dog for 2 days.
Now, there's a cafe across the street.
Good.
All right, that's the first portion of Tales of the Texas Rangers with Blind Justice, starring Joel McRae from 1951. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. All right, so here's the deal, Roger. We have a sign here, you know, the sign that goes in the showcase studio, WGN Radio Theater. It's yellow with...
Ours is yellow with
yours
red
is
letters.
Yellow, some are blue.
Yeah, it's really,
right.
Really, really cool.
Ours is really
yeah.
Cool.
And
so I'm going to take
Lisa's
it.
Lisa's like, I'm taking the sign. I'm like, no, you're not going to take
yeah,
that sign.
Yeah, I'm
not?
Taking it. Why
no,
wouldn't I?
And I'll tell you why. Because
okay.
I think we should auction it off.
Ooh.
For charity.
Roger, who wants it?
No, we should give it.
I think you've got like 10 million listeners who would want it.
I think.
I'm one of them.
We should. I haven't figured this out yet, but we should come up with a very deserving charity, like
yes.
Carl's Classic Radio Fund.
I think that the listeners would suggest that you give it to me
no,
because I am deserving.
That was a
of
joke.
The sign.
I really
you can give it to my favorite.
I really mean a true, you yeah. know, true charity.
What
I,
is your favorite charity?
Oh, me, myself, and I.
That's what I thought.
I was thinking something for kids. I'm always like, I
you're
love.
Like, yeah,
doing
that would be
kids.
Great.
Carl loves kids.
Yeah, something
yeah.
with kids, and we should auction it off, and the highest bidder. Would donate to that charity, and we'd give him the sign, him or her.
I think that is awesome.
It's our sign
Seriously.
That we've had for 3 years.
You know what?
Yeah. And you know, if
I
you put it up in the window
sign,
up here,
and I will make a donation to a charity. I'm keeping the sign.
No, you no, can't. You've got to give it to whoever.
I don't got to give it to
yes,
anybody.
Yes, you
got to
do
it.
Yeah, you do got to do it.
Where'd you get this? Got
you.
Hey.
I was copying you.
Gotta.
Gotta give it away. It's mine.
What's going on over there?
I asked Stephanie for it.
I got to do
and
it.
I got it. And it's
you're
mine.
Not going to get
and
that.
I want it.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
She's not getting that sign.
She's not going to get it?
She ain't going to get that sign. I'll tell you that right now.
Nah.
This right now.
Getting the sign.
She's getting the sign.
Getting the sign.
No,
she's
if
not
you're
the sign.
If you're the highest bidder, you can have the sign.
Yeah,
I'm the highest. If I'm high.
If you bid more than one of our listeners for this charity, then you can
Roger,
have the sign.
Whose side are you on?
Roger's on my side.
I think it's a fantastic
charity.
Idea.
Charity.
You don't even have a charity. You're just—it's a general just charity.
He
Listen,
will.
I think
he
you
will
should give it to
one.
Charity.
Yes,
Listen,
and there's
faith,
one
hope and charity.
There are
exactly.
Wait a minute! I thought that was my.
What's her last name?
These are my three live-ins.
You're right.
Faith, hope, and charity. And if I did, I wouldn't have a MyPillow in a glass case.
That's right.
But I do.
I think that's great. A children's charity in town. I think. Well, there's Comer's Children's Hospital.
That's
I think
perfect.
Would be great.
That's perfect. Comer's Children's Hospital.
Yeah, and
perfect.
Probably you could probably get the donation. To like one of their play areas, their children's or
whatever
a waiting
they
room,
do with it, as
a
long
waiting
as it goes
room
to the kids.
Where they could be playing old time radio shows while
right.
the adults wait.
Can listen to the Cinnamon Bear.
There you go. Yeah. Oh my gosh, this is awesome! Do it,
I
do it, do it, do it, do it.
It's time for news. It's 1:31 with Roger Batters.
Or when we come back at 1:30, whatever it'll be done when Roger's done. It's more Tales of the Texas Rangers.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
That sign's going to charity. And it's not your charity, Lisa Wolf. You be nice and let somebody bid on it, and we give the money to charity. Right, Roger?
10-4.
10-4. Over and out.
Over and out, good buddy.
How much do you think somebody's going to offer you for your sign?
I will. Can I guess?
Yeah.
Sure.
I would say it'll be over $5,000.
No.
You're
yes.
out of your mind.
Yes.
Be that much.
Yes.
Roger.
If you promote this, I think somebody, one of our listeners, will easily give over $5,000 for charity.
So.
I'll make
wow,
you bet.
That would be amazing. I would be so.
You have some amazing
thrilled.
Listeners.
I would be thrilled.
And you have a ton of listeners.
I would be so
well,
thrilled.
Well, that's true.
That would be unbelievable if somebody would do that. For a good cause. And yeah, and we'd sign it and they could have the sign.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought you were talking like $50, so we're
no,
all...
I thought
someone would probably pay between $500 and $1,000.
No, I truly, honestly believe.
But man, gosh, for once, Roger, I hope you're right.
I am too, but I
don't have my sound effects thing. Yeah. Nick DiGilio stole my sound effects.
Oh, everything's gone there? They don't even have the
Nick
machine.
Took it.
Well, I'm still here, so that'll work.
I don't even have sound effects anymore.
No. He's just
I'm
lost
handicapped
his mojo.
Over here.
Oh, he's okay. I'm going to leave that one alone. I know when to
All right,
be
we're
going
to figure this out. We'll make an announcement
but
this
you just
morning.
Made it.
Well, tonight. We'll make an
announcement. You just made it.
No, we're going to make an announcement tonight about the sign. Because there's only one. It's the only sign. There's only one.
Well, there's only one for WGN Radio Theater. Is
and
what
we'll
you mean.
Yeah, and we'll sign it to the person.
It's in very good condition.
Sure,
no, no,
it
no
is
cares.
$5,000.
Also, it's a one of a kind.
It is one of a kind.
There aren't any other signs that
no,
say
and
that.
Ours is bright yellow,
and we're
going
to sign it and personalize it to.
That's right.
And we will meet with the person and we'll even buy that person lunch. How's that?
Wow!
Take them to lunch.
Are you talking for me or just for you?
You and I will take the person to lunch mm-hmm. at any restaurant here in Chicago.
Are you
they'd like.
Any restaurant?
Yeah, and I'll buy him lunch, him or her, and they, whoever wins the most, right. you know, texts in the most,
whoever
chair for
pledges
charity.
The most, right?
All right,
yeah.
all right,
and,
I'm in with that
for kids. And then they'll get the sign, and we'll sign
right,
it to them
well,
at lunch.
You'll have to come up with a specific charity.
Yeah, you guys will have to, you know,
no,
dot
Roger
the I's and cross the
Roger
T's.
Roger said the charity.
Yeah, Comer Children's Hospital
that's
would
a
be
great,
a nice
that's
one.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
you know, it'd be perfect.
Okay.
It's a perfect thing. Okay. Can you give up the sign, Lisa?
All right. For a good cause. I really didn't think it'd be worth that. So let's wait and see what happens.
All right. So we'll make a formal announcement tonight about it.
Work out the details and come back.
But Roger, good idea, buddy.
Well, you're the one who wanted to do it for charity. I just filled in the details.
He just didn't want me to have it.
No, that's not true.
No, it's not.
It's not true. I want to do something good for
man.
It's a call to pay it forward, you know?
There you go.
Pay it forward.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm in.
All right.
That's done. Cross that off. Check it off the list. Done.
Now, time for the conclusion to Tales of the Texas Rangers.
We took our time. A statewide pickup was out for James Waterman, and it seemed just a matter of pinning him down. But when we got finished and walked over to the funeral home, the case wasn't so simple. Our lab man, Marty Ferris, was just finishing a phone conversation.
No, I said there's no doubt about it. Yeah, check on it. Pearson just walked in. I'll tell him. Bye. Howdy, Jace.
Howdy, Marty. Marty Ferris, Sheriff Ritchie.
Now, we met when the sheriff came in with the body. And, Jace, we got trouble. This thing is blown wide open.
All right, what's the matter?
That's the prints. And take a look at them. Now, here's a copy of the unidentified set I sent on to Austin. The man who made them has no record.
Well, why should he have a record? Aren't they the blind man's prints?
No, they aren't, Jace. The prints on the body match the known prints pulled from the cane. The dead man is James Waterman.
What?
That's it, Sheriff. Here, look at the prints. See for yourself.
Marty, could you have made a mistake?
No, Jace. I just checked with Austin on the phone by classification number. Waterman must have been blinded sometime after he left Huntsville. He took the name of Wilson as an alias.
Now all we've got is a set of unidentified prints that might match anybody in the state. Sheriff, our killer isn't going to be easy to find. Whoever the blind man's companion had been, there had to be a starting point for their journey along the river. A place where they'd picked up a boat or a raft. The sheriff and I worked our way along the river above the town, questioning the occasional Mexicans who managed somehow to make a living where no living was to be made. And in one spot, less than a mile from the road, we found something.
Can see it clearly now, Jace.
Yeah. Impression of a flat-bottomed boat on that mud flat. Had to be dragged quite a ways to the water. Not many days ago, either. Ooh, ooh, boy. Mud around where the boat was is caked dry. Spot where the boat was setting still looks damp.
Uh-huh. Boat must have been there without being used for quite some time. River's been way down for more than a year.
A little smoke coming up from behind those trees.
Must be a Mexican hut.
Whoever's there might own the boat. Let's ask him.
Get up, Charlie.
Up, boy.
Tacos cooking. Smell them?
Yeah. Smell something else, too. Chicken frying. There's a place. I can see it now. Yeah,
pretty high class for river hut. Looking back, chicken coop.
Kind of new, too. Coop wire, I mean. Hasn't been up very long.
Yeah, a woman out in front of the place. Well, she sees us.
Buenos dias, senor.
Buenos dias, senora. Ooh, ooh, Charlie.
Ooh, boy.
Maybe you can help us out, senora. We'd like some information about a boat that was out on that mud flat until a few days ago.
I never see a boat there, senor.
You never saw one there? What made that impression in the mud, then?
I called my husband. He speaks better English. Daniel? Venga?
Yes. What the matter? You don't let me sleep.
They know something about that boat, all right, Jace.
Yeah.
My husband. He come.
You want something, senor?
They want to know something about a boat.
There's a mark left by a boat down in that mud flat. When was the boat there last, and what happened to it?
It was maybe a week ago, the boat disappeared in the night. One morning, she's gone, that's all I know.
Who took it?
We don't know.
Just like that, huh?
She, just gone.
Don't try to feed us a story like that, you...
Now, just a second, Sheriff. Where do you work, Danielle? What do you do for a living?
Well, I do anything for whoever give me the work, but... For a long time, nobody give me any.
You must have saved a lot of money to be eating fried chicken and tacos. Where'd you get those chickens?
I raised them, senor.
Without hens and a rooster? There isn't anything in that coop old enough to sit a nest. And that coop wire is new.
What I mean to say, I was just starting to raise them.
Where'd you get the money to buy that coop wire and the chicks? You better talk up. This is part of a murder investigation.
Murder?
Blind man was murdered downriver. He got there by boat.
Are you...
Senor, I got nothing to do with murder. I just sell the boat.
Why didn't you say so before?
Well, because the boat was not mine.
But you sold it just the same.
Say, look, I tell you the truth. The boat is there for 2 years. Ever since we come here, I never know who owns it. And then one day, the men come.
Two men?
Say.
One of them blind?
Say. He got a dog and a white stick. The other man with him, he said to me, I give you $50 for the boat. Well, I don't say that the boat is mine. I just let him give me $50.
What'd the man look like? The one who could see?
Oh, he's big, just like you, with a light hair, very wavy, eyes blue. He said that when they come back, I can have the boat back for nothing. And he gave me more money if I don't tell nobody. I say, you give me more now. But he said he don't have no more until he come back.
That's the whole truth, senor, just like Daniel tell you.
All right. If it isn't the truth, we'll find out. Come on, Sheriff. Let's go.
All right. You two stay right around here in case we want to see you again.
Oh, we'll be here.
We'll be here. We don't run away.
Up, boy. Hey, heading back for the town?
Yeah. Marty may have some more information. And I think we just got a lead from Danielle on why Waterman and the other man went downriver.
Well, if you did, you got something I missed.
They promised Danielle more money when they came back. The money Waterman got in that stick-up 16 years ago never was recovered, remember?
Oh, I get it. That's why they dynamited into that rock ridge. Waterman must have hidden that money until it cooled off.
That's right. But before he ever got back to it, he was caught and sent to Huntsville for 10 years.
Why didn't he go for it as soon as he got out 6 years ago?
That's one of the things we still don't know. Maybe Marty will have the answers when we get back to town. Marty had the answers, all right. Reports from Austin that had come in while we were on the river.
I made notes on everything, Jace, if you can read my writing.
Thanks.
A check back shows that Waterman lost his sight 3 days after he left Huntsville 6 years ago. Now, it's hard to run down because he didn't have to report to anybody. He'd served his full term, no parole.
I see. Happened in a highway accident, huh?
Yeah, caught a lift on a gasoline truck, went over an embankment and caught fire. The driver was killed, Waterman blinded.
Near Sonora. That means Waterman was headed this way from the pen. He was going straight for that money, Sheriff. Losing his sight stopped him.
But why did it take him 6 years to move for it again?
He had to find somebody to help him. A man with a load of stolen money hidden away doesn't trust many people.
He finally trusted somebody.
And got killed for it. I'm going to take a ride to Ozona. It's out of your county, Sheriff, but it's your case. You want to come along?
You bet I want to come along. Let's go.
In Ozona, we went to the rooming house where Waterman had lived under the name of Joseph Wilson. The landlady showed us to his room. It hadn't been rented to anybody else, and his things were still there. A few books in Braille, clothing, an extra harness for the dog.
Everything is just like he left it, just like it was when the police come after I called them. I haven't touched a thing. No money, nothing valuable was left here, only what you see.
It's all right, ma'am. Don't be upset. Nobody accused you of taking anything.
I just want you to know there wasn't nothing to take. He never had nothing. Always a couple of weeks behind in his rent. Not that I minded. I had nothing but sympathy for the poor man. Even fed his dog for him or never would have been fed.
Look, something you just said is important to me. Now, if he owes you money, there's nobody to pay it, so you're just going to lose it. The truth can't hurt you one way or the other. Did he really owe you rent money?
Yes. Why else would I say it? Every once in a while, he'd catch up. He'd got some kind of benefit checks from someplace once in a while.
What's your angle there, Jay?
I'm just figuring, Sheriff. Daniel got $50 for that boat he sold. There must have been more expenses getting from here down there. Somebody had to finance it.
His traveling companion, whoever it was.
Yeah. It's a cinch it was somebody Waterman met and got to know right here in Ozona. Ma'am, did Mr. Waterman, Mr. Wilson have any visitors here? Any friends?
I never saw a soul. Some fellow called him a few times, though, when he was homesick and couldn't work at the newsstand.
You know who it was?
No, he never gave me his name. Mr. Wilson just said it was somebody he knew from the stand.
The same fellow each time?
As far as I could tell from the voice.
I see. Thanks. Come on, Sheriff.
Was that all you want here?
Yeah, thanks. We located the place where Waterman had had his newsstand, a main intersection near a bank, a restaurant, an office building, and a medical and professional building. Somebody else was running the stand now. We staked out in my car across the street.
Looking for somebody fitting the description Danielle gave us?
That's right. Man who called whenever Waterman was sick might have been a regular customer.
There could be quite a few customers fitting that description, Jase.
We'll tag the ones who come close. See if the newsie or anybody around has any information on him. Somebody might have noticed the man we're looking for hanging around the stand from time to time. If he knew Waterman well enough to call his rooming house, he knew him well enough to stop for a talk.
You're right, of course, but this kind of waiting wears me out.
It's the dullest part of the job, Sheriff, but sometimes it's the part that pays off. For 2 days, we watched the corner. Occasionally, we followed a man who fitted the description supplied by Danielle. But each time we checked, the subject turned out to be somebody who hadn't been out of town. Then, just before the end of our second day of watching, I nudged the sheriff.
What is it, Jase?
Over there. No, past the newsstand. Just going into the medical and professional building.
Oh, yeah. He looks like he might be the boy, all right. His hair is really light and curly, which most of the others haven't been.
Let's see where he went. Oh, wait a minute. He's still in the lobby. There by the elevator. Let's wait until he's picked up.
There's the elevator now. Well, there it goes. He's the only passenger.
Come on. Watch the floor marker. See where the elevator stops.
Third floor, Jase.
Yeah, let's take a look at the building directory on the wall.
Third floor, two doctors, a dentist, an attorney, and a chiropodist.
Go up to that floor. Try them all.
You want me to grab him?
No. If you spot him in a waiting room, just sit down like you're waiting too. After he leaves, find out anything you can about him. I'll wait back in the car and tag him after he comes out.
How do we get together again?
After I find out where he lives, I'll come back and pick you up on the corner. I waited for the man with the light curly hair. He came out of the building in 20 minutes. I started my car away from the curb slowly, keeping him in sight. Turned the corner and got into a car of his own. Drove to an apartment building. I noted the address and then went back and met the sheriff.
I hope you didn't lose him, Jase. I think he's the one we want.
Why? What'd you get?
He was in to see a doctor. Had a dressing on his arm changed. Doc said he's a regular patient who's been away on vacation.
Oh, been out of town, huh?
Yeah, but that isn't all. It's what he's being treated for that ought to make you sit up. Dog bite.
Dog bite? I thought that shepherd might have gotten to the killer just once before he was knocked out. Let's go visit him. I know the apartment building he lives in. You get his name from the doc?
J.B. Rowland works on the local newspaper.
Reporter?
No, has charge of distribution and circulation. Also takes care of the morgue. Back issue files.
Oh, that'd put him in touch with Waterman on the circulation end. And his taking care of the back issues might fit, too. That might have told him who Waterman really was.
Hey, that's right. Fishing through some old back issues, he might have read about the robbery and Waterman's conviction. Maybe seen a picture of Waterman and recognized it.
That'd make him get friendly. He'd know the money was never recovered and that Waterman didn't have it on hand, or he wouldn't be running a newsstand and living like he did.
You think he told Waterman what he knew and finally talked him into a deal? Or do you think maybe he forced him into it?
When we see him, we'll ask him.
There's the door, Jase. Apartment 2B. Gonna knock?
Yeah.
Yeah? Who is it?
Special delivery.
Oh, I'm not dressed. You better slip it under the door.
You got a sign for it.
Oh? Okay.
Hope you got a pencil.
All right, Roland. Open it all the way.
I'll open it. I'll open your skull.
Just watch him, Jase.
Stay away from that desk.
You're not taking me. Give me that gun. Oops. My arm.
Yeah. Same arm Waterman's dog chewed on, huh?
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, just the same, you went right for a gun. Brand new gun at that. Like you were expecting you might have trouble. Come on, get up.
Why'd you kill him? You want all the money instead of a split?
Money. Money.
Yeah, where's the money? What'd you do with it?
What did I do with it? I worked on him for months until he trusted me. Then we went down to the river, but we couldn't find the place. Couldn't remember all the landmarks. Couldn't see, and after 16 years, he couldn't remember. He couldn't remember. I went crazy. I planned on it so much, I went crazy. That's all. If I had the money, I could have gotten away. Without the money, I had to come back here so they wouldn't be looking for me.
All right, Roland. Go get some clothes on.
Looks like that $40,000 is really gone for keeps, Chase.
Yeah. Buried in a rock ridge somewhere near the Rio Grande.
That's money that never bought anybody anything. I feel sorry for that dog, Jace, breaking his heart and dying like he did.
Funny thing about a dog never passes judgment. He just sticks right to the finish, whether you're good or bad, worth it or not. I'll help Roland get a jacket on, then we can take him in.
For the murder of James Waterman, alias Joseph Wilson, J.B. Rowland was convicted and sentenced to Huntsville Penitentiary for a period of 99 years.
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McRae is currently seen starring in the Universal International Technicolor production, Frenchie. Tonight's cast included Tony Barrett, Peggy Weber, Herb Bygren, Ed Begley, Earl Keen, Tom Holland, and Tom McKee. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcutt, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keith. Hal Gibney speaking.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
That's Tales of the Texas Rangers, March 11th, 1951, Blind Justice, starring Joel McRae. Hope you enjoyed that.